This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today we have a fabulous show all about relationships with esteemed couples therapist, psychotherapist, and now best-selling author of an incredible new book, Love Hacks, Simple Solutions to Your Most Common Relationship Issues. So I have to ask you all, do you find yourself having the same fight with your partner over and over again? Have you stopped having sex, whether it's due to a lack of interest or infidelity? Maybe you're struggling to make time with your significant other, or you're unable to see eye to eye on an issue. It's natural for relationships to grow and change over the years, and conflict can even be healthy, says this renowned couples therapist. Here to unpack all of this for us and more is Kelly Miller, the author of Love Hacks, Simple Solutions to Your Most Common Relationship Issues. Before we meet Kelly, let me tell you a little bit more about her. As just mentioned, she's a very in-demand psychotherapist for individuals, couples, and families. She specializes in relationships. She was an advice columnist and has served on the editorial board of the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists magazine, The Therapist, and on Cal State Northridge's panel for relationship experts. She has been a co-host on LA Talk Radio, a relationship expert on Sirius XM, wikihow.com, and Balance by Nature TV, and she's contributed to various national and regional publications. Currently the host of All Things Relationships, Kelly is a frequent podcast guest and speaker to groups of all types and sizes. She lives in Studio City, California. Kelly Miller, welcome to Finding Your Bliss. So delighted to have you here.
Thank you so much. I love being on the show. I appreciate it.
First of all, congratulations on this beautiful book. Like even the title, Love Hacks, that's so great. Another word, of course, for our listeners who might not know the word hacks is methods, ideas, mm-hmm. but hacks is so great because it sort of suggests quick and short and shrift and get to it. And it's really jam-packed with practical advice and exercises. You've actually divided your book into 15 chapters, each one addressing a common relationship issue. And you've really hit the top ones. And then you take it a step further. And I love that you do this by providing three different exercises for each issue that couples can work on together. Can you tell us a little bit about your newest brainchild, Love Hacks, Simple Solutions to Your Most Common Relationship Issues?
Yes. So I'm glad you brought up the word hack, because that was my whole goal, is I just wanted to make it simple for people. And I think that while it's wonderful that people come in for traditional couples counseling, not everybody can do that. And I thought, how can I make it easy for people who are struggling and just need the quick and easy to get through things? And I thought about, you know, being in a therapist for quite a while, like what were the top 15 issues where people come into my office and collected them and then thought about exactly that. What are the three solutions? Because not all the solutions are going to work for everybody. So can we devise something that can make it user-friendly, so to speak? And that was the whole goal.
It's awesome. So as a life coach, what I love about this is the fact that it is so user-friendly and that not all people can afford or have the time or the energy to go to a couples therapist. So you've almost created this portable guide that mm-hmm. couples can do together and or alone. And I love that you've sort of covered the gamut to get going, because sometimes you feel frustrated. Where do I begin? If you don't have the willingness of a partner to do it, or you just don't have the funds or the time to actually go, you've made it possible. And I think that's so, so brilliant. So good for you about all of that. What is the best way to use the book and make it work for you, whether it's going at it alone or doing it with a partner?
Sure. So the other thing that I wanted to do was make it very simple, where you don't have to read it cover to cover, or you can read it cover to cover. So if you are really struggling, let's say you are struggling with finances with your partner, you can literally go to that chapter and say, okay, you know, just go to that chapter and figure out some solutions. Or in general, I want to improve my communication styles, and maybe it's good to be proactive about an issue that I'm not having, but may have later, so I'll know what to do. So it's really up to the reader. But yeah, and as far as, you know, whether you want to do it with your partner, I think that's fantastic. But a lot of times partners aren't willing, and that's okay too, where you can figure out, I always say, you know, we can't control anybody else. We can only control ourselves. So if we can control and figure out some ways of communication that better serves everybody, that's a great start. So really either way works. There's no right or wrong.
That's fantastic. Well, a huge thing for couples is when you feel that your partner isn't listening to you. And so one of my favorite parts of your book, it really resonated, is this incredible exercise you have called fast food communication. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely brilliant. What is your fast food communication method slash hack that everyone can start using right now? I actually used it last night on my husband because I was like, I love this.
Yeah, that's great. So if you think about when you go to a fast food restaurant, you place the order and the employee repeats it back to you. So if you say, I want a hamburger and a small fries, they repeat it back and they actually show it on the screen to ensure accuracy.
Yes.
So they make it very clear. And then you have that chance to say, oh, okay, great. They got it right. Or no, you know, that's not correct. And so I want couples to do that same thing where we automatically assume, you know, what our partner's thinking or what they're feeling. And so it's just a really simple way to repeat back. And so let's say you know, your partner says to you, you know, I feel upset that you came home late. And I want couples to get into this idea where they just repeat back, you know, what I'm hearing you say is you're upset that I got home late last night. Mm-hmm. And it does two things. Number one, it does ensure that accuracy. Yes, I heard you right. But it also kind of allows this built-in pause where the partner feels validated. Okay, yes. Great, they heard what I said. Right. And I think our automatic response when someone comes with us is to kind of get defensive. And if we repeat back, that skips that step where, okay, I'm focusing on the partner, making sure their feelings are valid, then I can respond. And so I think it, you know, it helps. And I'm curious, how did your husband respond when you said that?
It was great. It was great because it disarmed him. Because I think he might have been a little bit on the offensive about it. And the minute I said, so what I hear you saying is da-da-da-da-da-da about this restaurant. And all of a sudden, it just sort of disarmed him. And he let down his guard. And he was, you know, it just was a better conversation from that moment on. Because he knew that I was hearing what he was saying. So it's so good. And it's so fast. So I love that fast food thing. Really, really awesome. So I want to ask you before we even go further, you were becoming a psychotherapist. You were going into all these areas. Did you know before you got into practice that you wanted to be a couples therapist all the time? Or is that something that evolved? Because I'm just wondering what led you to becoming a couples therapist and what characterizes you from all the other couples therapists out there?
It's a great question. I think it was one of those that always interests me. But then once I got into the field, I was like, oh, this is great. I love it. I mean, I have other therapist friends who are like, oh, couples, that's so scary. Or I have other ones that are like, I love it. I mean, I'm one of those that just love it. I think what differentiates me is that, I mean, number one, I consider myself non-judgmental. You know, like I want couples to come in, you know, I've probably heard it before. And my role is not to be a moral compass. You know, I'm not here to tell you what's right or what's wrong. It's really, how can I help you to bridge the gap? There's clearly a miscommunication. Yeah. And so I really pride myself in trying to understand both points of view and then helping them meet in the middle.
That's incredible. I sense that about you just from reading the book, that you're really good at what you do. And now that you have this is probably so amazing. You probably taught yourself stuff that you didn't even know as well. And now you're really like anyone who's going to go to you now is going to be very lucky because they're getting the best of the best. It can be completely overwhelming to start mending a relationship, whatever the issue may be. So for the person who feels that something isn't right in their relationship, maybe they feel that things have become boring. You mentioned boredom, or they're fighting too much or not connecting at all. And connection is huge, or even that things are different than they used to be in that wonderful honeymoon stage. What is a great starting point? Where do you recommend they begin?
Yeah. I want to just first normalize. I think a lot of times when we start to meet our partner, everything is rainbows and butterflies and everything's great. And that's because we have all these hormones that are happening in our body. And it is just impossible for those level of hormones to sustain through your entire partnership. So I think a lot of times partners come in like, I don't feel what I used to. And I'm like, you're not supposed to. So I think it's just normalizing that we can't stay at that level. And how can we replace that and reframe it and say, yes, that's amazing. And to feel that passion and excitement, But what is it, you know, what's the flip side of that? What are you feeling now that maybe you didn't in the beginning? And to me, that's like a true intimacy, a connection that can only be built over time. You can't have that, you know, in a 2 week, few month relationship that's built on memories and history. And so I think it's reframing, because I think a lot of times in our culture, we see all these things with movies and it's like, oh my God, I don't know if I'm in love with my partner the same way I'm seeing it on this screen. And, you know, so it's normalizing it and also normalizing that relationships are going to go up and down. You know, you're not going to feel 100% of your partner every day, you know, in love with your partner every day. It's going to be ebb and flows. And I think that educational piece is sort of the start where then people can be like, okay, I don't feel so bad or guilty.
Right. Exactly. Exactly true. And you've even advocated that if both partners are not available for couples therapy together, one of the partners can do it alone to start. So after doing this, how can someone start to initiate conversations about wanting to work on the relationship?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of the sandwich method, where we start out with the positive. Kind of the middle is like the meat or the hard stuff, and then we end in the positive.
Nice.
And so, for example, I suggest saying to your partner, the first great thing that comes to mind, you know, I really love how when we spend time together, I feel so connected. Or when we're together, I love how you tell me all these great things about me. So you're really starting with the positive. Then it's the meat. One thing I've noticed is that we're not seeing eye to eye in a couple of issues. And I think it might be helpful if we work together on some things and then ending again, you know. And what's really great about our relationship is that I can see this long term. And I think we have something really special here, or, you know, something along those lines where, because listen, everybody loves to hear nice things. And I think it's just the way that we frame things that make all the difference, right? Versus coming to your partner, you know, we're always fighting. We're not getting along. We need to see a couples therapist. You know, people are kind of like, but if we started out, and it takes more work, but it pays dividends in the end.
There's so many great things in the book. Like, I'm just thinking now about this page where you talked about all the things you can do on a date night. Like, I think a lot of people think date night is going for dinner or going to a play or a movie. Like, there's nothing else. And you have a beautiful list, a litany of great things. Give us some of your top creative thinking outside the box things that you can do together.
Sure. I think one thing to note is they've done studies that if couples do adrenaline-filled activities together, it can connect them. So if you are a little bit more of an adventure seeker, I suggest that. Like, but it doesn't have to be, you know, jumping out of a plane, but it could be, you know, go to a theme park or going to do axe throwing, you know, something different that's a little, that's just going to add a little bit of that spice. So that's the first thing I'd recommend. If that's a little bit too far out of your comfort zone. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, depending on your budget and style, I was trying to create a list, but even taking a walk around the block, if you're, you know, budget conscious, I think makes a big difference. Or a hike, or, you know, making your own pizzas together, you know, going to a park, you know, things like that, that are just, that don't have to be the traditional dinner movie.
It's great.
Just trying to change it up. Yeah.
That's so great. Couples, we've really been through a lot. Like, the world has gone through a lot. Couples have gone through a lot. It all started with COVID challenges that started from COVID to the rise of social media and more. Why do you believe it's harder now for couples to work together than it might've been, let's say, a decade ago?
I think there's just a lot more distraction now. And we have this little thing called a phone that is just dominating us in a lot of ways. And they've have done studies to show that when people are on dates, even if they just have their phone out, they're not even on it, that the other person doesn't feel as attended to. So I think that we just have a lot more, our culture goes quickly, we're fast. And so there's a lot more distractions. And so that to me is a big piece of it. And so that's why I'm a big proponent of those date nights are just having a few hours without any of those distractions, putting the phone in a basket, no phone zone, and just really coming back to each other.
So here's a question about, and I asked this just for, there's so much positive in the book that almost you have to be optimistic and hopeful that there's always a way, because you just have so many of these 15 different ideas are so fantastic of things that come up and then all the little exercises you can do. I think it's almost like there's something for everyone. But how do you know when you're in a relationship that it's time to end it? That, you know, it's just not happening. And it's just, you just, you know, you've crossed over that line.
Right. I think the first thing is if there's any type of abuse, right, a physical abuse, you know, sexual abuse, I mean, that's when you need to exit the relationship. So I just want to say that because I think there's a lot of confusion around that. So I just want to make that clear. I think it's when you come to that point where you can literally say, I have tried everything. Because I think a lot of times people want to exit quickly because, again, like we were saying, we're used to this very quick society. We get things quickly. It's instant. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of times younger couples, you know, they're even quicker to say, hey, this isn't working. I'm out. And so I want to teach people to have a little more patience. Like I was saying at the beginning, that things are going to go up and down. But you're right. There may be a point where it's like, hey, I have tried. I've given everything I can possibly give. And if I walk away, I will feel okay because I know that I have given everything to this. Right, right. That's kind of how I look at it.
Do you see this in your practice? Like, is this something where you go, they're not listening, or one of them's not listening, or right, one or both of them don't want this? Yeah. And is that often something that you will say to the couple, or is that something they come to themselves?
Right. So I don't feel like it's ever my place to say, hey, you know, you're done here, you know.
You're a disaster.
Right. No, I think, like, for sure, I've definitely seen couples where I can kind of tell one person's foot is out the door. But I think that's where I would explore it. And I'd say, hey, you know, it seems like you might not be all in. Why is that? Sometimes it doesn't even have to do with the partner. It's, hey, mm-hmm, I've had a childhood experience that's caused me, you know, to be afraid of intimacy. I mean, there's so many nuances. Mm-hmm. So it's really might not be about the partner. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, I think they have to come to that conclusion themselves. But that's okay, too, where it's like, okay, you know, you've mutually agreed this isn't going to be right. So how do we go from here? Do we want it to be amicable? You know, do you want contact? If you have kids, what does co-parenting look like? So I think there's more work to be done, you know, if needed.
Do you see couples who have, let's say, small kids and are going through divorce after the divorce? Like, do you continue to see a couple that may be separated or divorced when it comes to the kids and how to get along and how to make it all work?
And that's sometimes even harder than couples therapy because, yes, in a way, it's almost like you have less invested. Like, hey, I'm not even into this person. I'm not even married. But it's almost like looking at it a new way. Okay, but now we're not going to be, it's not about you two. It's about your kids that you both love, right? And so it's establishing that mutual goal of you both want the best for your kids. So let's start there.
Come together there. I want to start diving into some of the phenomenal tips and tricks that you share in Love Hacks. There's so much good stuff here. The first chapter of your book is called My Partner Doesn't Listen to Me. We talked about that a bit. And you write that this communication breakdown isn't always as straightforward as a partner not listening. There are actually two different types of listening: sounding board and feedback. That was so cool when I read that. It's important for us to separate the two. Can you say more?
Sure. Yeah. So I think a lot of times, you know, I'd have couples who come in and they're like, my partner's not listening to me. And the other partner's kind of like surprised, you know, like, wait, what do you mean? And so if we can differentiate, it's that understanding that's going to help so much. So giving feedback, right, is somebody's going to tell us what's going on with them and we're going to give our responses. Oh my God, that must be so hard. You know, hey, would you consider talking to them, you know, about X, Y, and Z, and kind of giving suggestions and feedback. And then there's a sounding board where you're just listening, right? Where we've heard a lot of typically women, I just want to vent. I don't want feedback.
Right. So I don't want a solution. I don't want a solution. Right. I just want to know that I'm being listened to. Right.
And so it's very simple. It's either we tell our partners up front, hey, I would love feedback. I'm going to tell you what's going on with me. I would love your feedback. Or, hey, I would just love for you to be a sounding board today. And then they know. And if that's too hard, I suggest the partners after the one person shares saying, hey, would you like feedback or do you just want to vent today? And so it's very simple because I think a lot of times people can get insulted, like, oh, they're giving me solutions as if I'm not doing it right. Or, you know, and the other person's like, I'm just trying to be helpful here. Why are they hurt? So there's going to be a lot of miscommunication around that.
Absolutely. And isn't it true that, and I mean, maybe I'm generalizing by saying this, that guys can be a little more solution oriented and women like to do the brainstorming and the, right, and the working it out just by talking about it.
Yes, 100%. When again, and they're both coming from great places. That's what I have to remind couples, like, you know, and in this case, let's say the man, you know, he's thinking, oh my God, I'm being helpful. She's got this nail in her head and I'm telling her how to get it out, you know, like, metaphorically speaking. He's like, it's so obvious, right? And she's like, no, I just want you to be that space. So, right, we process
of empathy. Yeah. Absolutely. So again, so many great tips. We talked about the fast food communication. It's one of my favorites and so powerful. Another one you've talked about, and I love this too, is that timeouts are not just for kids. Can you say more about the whole idea of sometimes even a 24-hour, you talk about, like, let's deal with it in the morning, not even a timeout, because we think of a timeout for a kid as being like 15 minutes in the corner, but this could literally be, let's sleep on it and pick it up the next morning. Can you say more?
Sure. So I think what happens is, look, we're all going to get heated. We all get escalated in couples. But I want to help couples before they get to that point. And so that starts with recognizing our own anger. Okay, can we check in? And if you look at a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being you're about to explode, 1, mm-hmm. you're like a Zen Buddha calm. That's 6. When you cut to realize, I want you to say, hey, I'm getting heated now. I'd love to take a timeout. Or, hey, it looks like we're getting heated here. Can we take a timeout? Yes. And so what that entails is any way that you can get centered in that timeout period, whether that's taking a walk for you, listening to music, calling a friend, anything. And I always say the person who calls the timeout, it's their job to then reconvene it a few hours later.
Yes.
Now, again, if it is, you know, 12 at night, it might be, hey, it's late, but I want to, you know, I want couples to put that timestamp on it so that it's not just, it just disappears. It will be revisited where, hey, I'm exhausted. Let's pick this up again after we drop off the kids at 9 tomorrow. Because we forget people aren't going to be receptive when things are heated. So it really works both ways. You both are calmer. Your partner's going to be able to hear you better. It's just a win-win for everybody.
So smart. Really, really, really brilliant. Another one that most couples can relate to is the struggle of making time for each other, whether it's children, family, or work. It can be difficult prioritizing time with your partner. So you do a phenomenal, this stuff is brilliant stuff, guys. It's an exercise called Quick Partner Connections. And the acronym you use for this is called T's. So yes. T for traditions, E for efforts, A for acknowledgements, S for silly, and E mm-hmm. for erotic. Can you tell us more about that? Before we hear about Kelly's fantastic acronym, T's, we're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Finding Your Bliss and Kelly Miller when we come back.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And I've been having a fascinating conversation with psychotherapist and couples therapist Kelly Miller. Just before the break, I was asking you, Kelly, about your acronym for Quick Partner Connections. It's a wonderful one called T's. Can you break this down for us?
Yeah, sure. So I think a lot of times people think like, oh my God, I don't have 2 hours to devote to my partner. And I'm like, no, you don't have to. And so, yeah, I wanted to create something simple. And so traditions is, can you come up with something that you and your partner just have for the two of you? Whether nice. That's, hey, let's have coffee in the morning for 5 minutes, or let's just give each other a kiss when we leave and a kiss when we come back. Yeah. E is efforts. Can we do something with our partner that's not a big deal, but I don't want you to tell the partner about it because it's got to come from a place of love. So can I give them their morning coffee? I had a couple who the woman loved to have a water pitcher by her bed. And one day her husband just filled up the water pitcher and she's like, oh, that's so sweet. You know, things like that, that are small, but meaningful.
Yes.
A is acknowledgements, right? You know, everybody loves to hear good things about themselves. And it's, you know, same thing in couples. So can we acknowledge our partners in a really beautiful way? Can you send a text and say, I love your laugh? And I was just thinking the other day of, you know, how special it was when we went to Paris, or, you know, anything that just brings like a little bit of loving that, again, mm-hmm. not a ton of effort. S is silly. I think a lot of times we become so serious and we forget. And can we make it sort of fun again? Like when your partner comes home, can you talk in a foreign accent? Like, can you just put on a pig nose and just be fun? Like, because we need to break up some of that where, you know, you can't help but laugh, right? It's funny. And then E is erotic. And can we bring back some of that, right? We forget sex doesn't just start in the bedroom. It starts way before that. So if that's a little bit outside your comfort zone, can you just write like a sensual poem to your partner, something mm-hmm. to ignite that piece of it?
Right. Or a great text that they can linger with all day. Sure. I remember there used to be a book. I used to produce something called The Shirley Show. And I remember we had on mm-hmm. someone who talked about the 10-second kiss. Like, you know, you have a 10-second kiss with your partner. And if you think about it, if you actually take your lips and put them on your hand and imagine how long that 10 seconds is, it's a long time. Yeah. And if you do that in the morning, that will linger all day long and you'll remember it again at night and go, wow, let's continue that kiss wherever it started, you know? You also write that sometimes we need to zoom out in order to zoom in. So this almost feels a little bit like the timeout, but that's so cool because it's about getting fixated on the now that we can't see the bigger picture. The strategy is about zooming out, stepping back to see the big picture. But what a great visual that is. Can you tell us more about that?
So, I mean, if you imagine you're in a relationship over a period of, let's say, you know, 40, 50 years, if you start in your 20s till your, you know, your 80s, you know, things like that. If you look at that and you imagine it almost as in a graph, you're going to kind of see, you know, it probably will go up. And even if it stays steady, you know, you might see some up and downs. But if you zoom out, like, it's great, that's steady, or, you know, even better, it's going up. So I have to remember, I have to remind couples that we get so fixated on those little jags down, like, oh, I'm in a downturn. And I'm like, okay, but we got to pull back and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to get through this one and I'll keep going. Or I've gotten through these other little, you know, downturns and it's been okay. And so it's that reminder.
That's awesome. That's even a great way to look at the world, right? At difficult times in the world is to go, when you look at the whole continuum and the whole graph at large, and you realize, yeah, there's been hard times before, but we've climbed back up and you know, we will again. Like it's just a wonderful philosophy. So you have a whole area in the book that is great, all about addiction, anger, and past trauma that can enter into relationships. And this is huge because the relationship is not immune from those things. It will be affected by addiction. Mm-hmm. What is some of your advice for coping with this partner that's suffering from some kind of an addiction or vice versa?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest piece is education for both parties, right? So I think that the person who's struggling with the addiction, that helps to know, hey, why is this happening? Looking at your genetics, you know, things of that sort. And also for the partner, I think it's very easy for the person on the outside to say, wait, I don't get it. Why can't my partner just stop drinking? Right. And understanding why addiction happens can be helpful. And I think the second piece is I really want the partner of the addicted persons to get help as well. Because we think, oh, well, you know, that person's drinking, they need the help. But it's, you know, they call it like a family disease and we all need to get help around this. Right. And so that person can kind of take care of themselves while they're supporting their partner through the addiction.
That's brilliant. That's great, great advice. So I have a question that relates to a kind of addiction. The addiction is workaholism.
Yes.
Asking for a friend. Someone is so wrapped up, out of necessity in this case, in their work, that there is much less time to spend together as a couple. And I'm talking 24/7. And this is not something that can be altered in the short term. They are going to have to work this hard.
Yes.
But it's very difficult on the person who is left alone. And it's also very difficult on the person who is working all the time.
Sure.
What can be done to capitalize on sometimes the very little, sometimes microscopically little time that they have together?
Right. I think the first thing is we have to remember our actions convey our priorities, right? And so, yes, work is important, but our relationships are equally important. And so we have to remember that piece of it. But I think it's, to me, it's literally putting it on the schedule and it's like a non-negotiable. Unless there's an emergency, on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock, you are having that date night. Mm-hmm. And saying, I have to look at my relationship as if I don't make it a priority, it's going to be non-existent. The partner's not going to be able to feel loved and cared for. So I need to change some things. And again, you know, I always say to people with date nights, it doesn't have to be this big drawn out experience. It can be an hour. Hey, I have an hour, but I'm completely undivided attention wise with you during this hour. So scheduling.
I believe in that so much. I believe one thing that my husband and I have done for literally 28 years is Saturday night is our date night, come hell or high water. Like that is, it's a given. It's a thing. Mm-hmm. There's other things that we can fit in, but that's the one that is absolute, even if it has to be at home, if it has to be abbreviated, but it's a thing that happens. And I think that works really, really well. You also talk about the differences between compassionate love and passionate love. And how do they affect relationships in the long run? And I love that because it's not always going to be passionate, But if it's compassionate, you're probably going to get to the passionate part.
What's funny, it's called companionate. And I thought the same thing too. And it, companionate meaning like almost like you're a companion, right?
Yes.
And so it's really interesting. So there was an author named Jonathan Haidt who did a graph of the first 6 months of a relationship and then the relationship kind of I was talking about over 40 years. And it was really interesting. The first 6 months of the relationship, it totally went up. And it was like, oh, yes. And then it went down. And then if you looked at the other graph, it just was this gradual. And so it's this idea that, yes, those first 6 months are going to be very lustful and exciting, but then it does drop. But over time, you know, you kind of experience this beautiful intimacy. And so it's recognizing that, yeah, we're not going to get the lust that we had at the beginning, but now we're going to have a deeper friendship, a history, you know, things that cannot be possible within, you know, a few months. These are things that have to be built over time.
Right. I love that you say that about the lust. So why do couples, and you address this pretty heavily in the book, stop having sex? And what are your top three tips for dealing with sexual issues?
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, there could be a variety of reasons. And the first thing I always say to couples is I want you to get medically checked out because there could be a hormone imbalance. There could be something of that nature. So that's the first thing that, you know, I want couples to be aware of, like, okay, because, you know, you immediately go to like, oh my God, is it me? Is it my partner? Let's just rule out anything medically. But yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is knowing, yes, over time, it's just going to decrease. And when it becomes an issue is if one person's unhappy with the frequency. So I think it's, you know, sitting down with each other and saying like, what feels right to you? Like, does three times a week feel too much, too little? So having an open conversation, I think that sex is so taboo, but we need to not make it be, hey, this is part of our, you know, relationship here. But one of the things I do is kind of have what I call like green light and red lights. And so a lot of times, you know, we're too embarrassed to tell our partners what we like and what we don't like. And so I kind of made a little chart in the book where we can go over like what feels good to you and what doesn't feel so good. Because a lot of times I think it's embarrassing for people, you know, our partners have been doing something a certain way. We don't really like it. Like, oh, I never loved, you know, kissing on the ear and my partner keeps doing it, but I'm too now embarrassed to say it. And so it's like, okay, let's just write it all down. What works? And hey, what's not working so much for us? And that could be a, you know, a good start. Another couple things is like, if you haven't had sex for a while, there's something called sensate focus therapy.
That was cool.
Yeah. It's a really beautiful non-intimidating technique of how can we focus on sensations with our partners and touch rather than sex. And so there's five stages that are outlined in the book of like, how can we sort of bring back some of this without it being about orgasm or, you know, things like that. And then just building that connection physically first without that pressure.
Yes. Yeah, it's a really, really cool exercise, like just touching someone's face and doing all this non-genital thing and just getting back that sort of romantic, like if you think about, you know, in the movies, it's not really about the intercourse, it's about the whole romance and the seduction and the, you know, and the love and the love. So that it's really beautifully laid out. It's one of the best I've ever seen. And I've read a lot of these kinds of books and it's really, really good. And you talk about a lot of the books too. I love that too, that you talk about the five love languages and you break it down because that's a wonderful book. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you incorporate that into your couples therapy and into your practice?
Sure. Yeah. So there's five love languages and we each have one of how we most feel connected to our partners. And so the five love languages are acts of service, quality time, physical touch, gifts, and words of affirmation. And I outlined these in the book and we kind of can realize like, oh, I feel the most connected to my partner when he or she tells me, you know, that I'm a great partner or words that are meaningful to me. Or I have other, you know, partners who are like, I feel the most connected when my partner gives me a massage or holds my hand and it's like physical touch. And so it's recognizing that. But I think a lot of times partners come into my office and they're like, I don't feel like they love me. And the other partner's like, what do you mean? I want to have sex with you every night. And so his love language was physical touch and hers wasn't. Right. And so it's like kind of recognizing, no. She feels the most loved when you tell her, right? He feels the most loved when you're giving him, you know, physical touch. So it's nice to identify that where nobody's wrong, right? And I think that's the other thing. They want to point to their partner. They're not showing me. They're not doing. It's like, no. We just need to learn each other's language.
Yes, that's great. That's so, so cool. It reminds me also, this was another thing you talked about that was so amazing, about a suggestion of yours is when you're feeling out of love with your partner is to write love letters to each other. And the letters should describe how the couples initially met, why they fell in love, what this can do to help rekindle romance and love in a relationship, and how couples can move from memories of being in love to recapturing that in the present. I have a cool suggestion too, but can you say more about that? Because the love letters is so powerful.
So I think we forget, right? We've been with our partner a while and it's like, you know, we forget. Now we're focused on that they're leaving their dirty socks around. And so it's taking that moment of why did you fall in love initially? You know, you're here for a reason. And so sometimes it's that reminder of like, oh my God, I fell in love with them because of X, Y, and Z. And so writing it on a piece of paper and then reading it to your partner is so powerful. Right. And again, it's like, oh my God. And then it kind of reactivates the partner. Like, oh, they love this about me. Okay, great. I can do that again, or I can step it up, or, you know, things like that.
It's so, so good. It reminded me when I read this of a beautiful thing my husband and I did on our honeymoon 28 years ago in Greece, which was to write love letters to each other, looking over a crayon blue sky and those white, beautiful buildings of Santorini. Yes. And we kept those love letters and have always kept them in a heart-shaped box. And we do pull them out every 10 years or so to reread them to each other. Saying this actually now makes me want to pull it out and do that again. I actually got it from a very dear friend of mine, a makeup artist to the stars named Nancy Crosley. It was her idea, but we did it as well. So it's such a powerful thing. Do it on the honeymoon and then revisit it. Or if you haven't done it, start now. And then revisit it.
That is such a great idea.
Yeah. It's so, even the thought of it makes you smile, right? It's sometimes you don't even have to reread it. It's just thinking about it and you get all tingly thinking about it. That's so cool. What do you say? Okay. So there are serious things that get in the way of a relationship. And one of them, of course, is infidelity. Can you move past infidelity? And if so, how? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Finding Your Bliss and psychotherapist Kelly Miller when we come back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hey everyone, we're back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, FM 96.7. And I was just asking you, Kelly, if it's possible for couples to move past infidelity.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I want to make that very known that yes, it is possible. I think there's this idea of like, it can never work again. And I have seen couples who actually become closer even after infidelity. Wow. And I think it's because there's a rawness and an authenticity that happens after that. You're kind of, your foundation is stripped and you really have to start being vulnerable and honest and transparent. And so I think that there are absolute ways to do it. So one of the things that I suggest in the book is a 5-step outline for dealing with infidelity. And the first one is I want their partner to take accountability. That's a huge one. So it's really owning it. Hey, I messed up in the relationship. You know, I had an affair. I've hurt both of us. You especially, I've hurt the relationship. So really owning it is going to be huge. Then that second piece is expressing remorse. And I'm really sorry that I have done this and caused this damage to you and our relationship. 3 is acknowledging the harm. I recognize what this has done to us, to our children, you know, if there's children involved. 4 is committing to change. And I realize that I've made a mistake and I'm not going to do that going forward. I am committed to you and I'm going to do things differently. And then 5 is requesting forgiveness. And notice how I didn't say, you know, demanding, begging, it's a request. And the other person has to be then ready to accept that. But that's just a 5 step outline that can kind of help couples in that space.
That's brilliant. That's so incredible. Another huge area, of course, is money, finances. It can be a real point of contention in relationships. And you write, this is because money is closely tied to our emotions. Our need for financial stability affects our identity, our self-worth, and well-being. So you created a system to help address money called CLOSER, C-L-O-S-E-R, which stands for communicate honestly, list goals, organize priorities, set specific goals, envision a plan, and review goals. Can you tell us more about CLOSER? Because I think this is huge for a lot of couples.
Yeah. So finances, again, it's one of those things that is just a really hot topic button. Because if you think about it, we all grew up differently with how money and finances were modeled, right? And so that's the first thing is like, I always want couples to kind of check in about like, hey, how were things handled in your home? You know, was one of your caregivers a saver, a spender? Was money not talked about? Did your parents overspend? And so there's so much that can be learned about our history. So that's kind of the first piece. But yeah, the CLOSER, I think, is a really great way for couples to talk about their goals. And they may be further or closer than they think, right? And so that first piece is communicate about it. Let's talk about it. What are your goals? Do you want to save money together on a house? Do you want to save money for a vacation? L is listing those goals. So let's write those down. Hey, I want to, you know, start saving for our home. O is organizing that. So let's talk about how that's going to be. So maybe every week we put, you know, $100 toward this down payment.
Yes.
S is setting those specific goals, and how we're going to do that is we'll each put in $50. You know, E is envisioning those plans. So how does that look? What does it look like for both of us? And then R is revisiting those goals later on. So, you know, in 6 months, let's come back. Let's talk about how we're doing on this. Does it feel like it's too big of a stretch? Is it working?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. There's also a huge issue about boundaries in a relationship. And we think sometimes the relationship, oh, you can just relax. It's your closest primary relationship. But it can't be that. There's got to be some boundaries, right? And you talk about some questions that you can ask to start figuring out what your boundaries are. Why is it so important, even in a couple that have been married for many years, to have some established boundaries that say, wait, you can't go past this boundary?
Yeah, I think because we're individual people. And I think there's this idea that if we're a couple, we're like enmeshed. And no, we're still individuals. We still have needs and wants. And it's really important that we don't lose our voice in relationships. And we have things that are non-negotiables. Hey, this doesn't work for me, or this does work for me, and things like that. And so I do want couples to talk about what works for them or what doesn't work. And kind of how I look at it, which may help people if you're visuals, like, you know, to me, the best couples are the letter H, where they each individually stand alone. And then there's that bridge. Rather than the letter A, where they're kind of like codependent and they're on each other. It's like, no, we're each individuals. We have our own things that are going to work for us, and we need to talk about them and express them.
Love that. For people, and I know we sort of address this a little bit with the workaholism thing, but for people who are struggling to balance family, work, and their relationship, what do you recommend when it's all sort of, you know, someone's really having in the relationship a hard time balancing it?
Sure. I think the first piece is knowing it's not going to look perfectly balanced all the time. And I think there's this idea of like balance means every day it's going to be completely balanced. And I'm like, no. So maybe it's saying, okay, this week I'm going to devote to my partner. Mm-hmm. Next week I'm going to devote to work. And the week after I'm going to devote to my kids, or whatever it is. That it's just recognizing the balance can look different ways. Mm-hmm. And the idea is let's commit to doing it, to making it more even and balanced.
Nice. And vision boards can help with this. And I'm a big vision board believer, but how can you use these as a couple?
Yeah, I love vision boards too. And it's a great activity for date night.
Yes, it's fun.
Yeah, it's talking about together, hey, what are our shared goals? What do we want to do? What do we want to work on? Let's get some magazine, make some collages and put it up and, you know, make it a fun joint project. So I love that idea.
Okay. Another thing that was really cool was your values pie chart. Mm-hmm. And I remember you had this huge wedge devoted to trust. It really resonated. But that was that particular couple's chart. So can you explain? It reminds me a lot of the Bliss Wheel of Life that I use in life coaching. But can you talk to us about a values pie chart and how you can tailor make one specifically, like custom design a bespoke values pie chart for you as a couple?
Sure. So yeah, this came about because I had a couple and they weren't sure if they were like right for each other. And I kind of said, well, you know, what are the most important attributes for you in a relationship? And I want you each separately to develop that. And, you know, this particular guy was like very analytical and he loved this with the numbers and, you know, could kind of figure it out. But it's really interesting to see kind of where they overlapped. And so, yeah, couples can do this, or you can do this on your own, where you kind of write down your top 10 attributes of what you want in a relationship, right? Is it trust? Is it authenticity? Is it somebody who's going to share my values? Is it somebody who has a, you know, knack for adventure? You know, what's important? Because it's going to differ for everybody. And then just trying to kind of make either, like, if you're a numbers person, making a percentage, or maybe you just want to say number one is trust. I really need to feel that safety within my partnership. Number two is, you know, values. I want to make sure that we're on the same page. And so, and then kind of come together and you can share and see, okay, what's important. And then it's great for the other partner to know, okay, trust is the most important for her. So therefore I've got to, you know, step it up and make her feel safe. Or here are some other ways that I can make it feel better for her in this relationship.
What if not through infidelity, but just the trust has been broken in some element of that wheel or that with the relationship? How do you begin to rebuild that trust when someone's trust is really shattered? And it's not it's not for an infidelity reason, but for some other reason.
Sure.
And you're not trusting.
Right. So I always tell people, obviously, you know, trust has to be earned. So it's not going to be an overnight process. And, you know, it's funny. I actually had a couple who, unfortunately, like, their son had like a peanut allergy. And he was really upset because her husband, like, just wasn't taking it as seriously as she was. And the son ended up having an allergy and they had to go to the hospital. And it was really hard for her to, you know, if you want to call that like a, you know, a mistrust or something, but it was hard for her to get past it. And so I think it's really talking about that resentment and like why it's so upsetting. And like, you know, the only way out is through. And so not only is, you know, trust has to be earned, but we also have to really talk about what, why did it hurt her so much and kind of ended up, you know, she felt like she was like parenting alone and there was like a lot involved, but I think we need to talk about those resentments and what it came to be and why it's so upsetting and everything like that. And then we can slowly over time start to rebuild our partner's trust.
So in a lot of relationships, there's the talker and there's the silent one. And the talker wants to talk it out and the silent one just wants to not talk about it. What do you say to couples who have that
issue?
Yeah,
I know. It's very, I think you have to meet in the middle, right? Where we say, because look, I mean, we have to address issues, but yes, it can be very overwhelming for the person who doesn't want to talk and they can shut down. So I think it's very simple of, hey, I know you're not the biggest talker in this. Can we just do 10 minutes where we just, we'll put on the timer and we'll just talk about it for 10 minutes. After 10 minutes, we'll take a break. If we need to come back to this tomorrow, the next day, and that way that person isn't so overwhelmed.
Beautiful. What is your number one, absolute number one recommendation, Kelly, to rekindle connection with a partner?
You know, for me, it's vulnerability. It's really going there and saying to your partner, hey, you know, I've noticed we're not as connected as we used to be. You know, what can we do? And sort of like breaking that wall. Well, I think we just sort of, you know, oh my God, I don't want to mess things up. And I don't want to, and I'm like, no, no, the key to that intimacy is getting really vulnerable and getting really raw. So that's, you know, one thing I suggest.
I love that. What is the thing you love the most about helping couples in therapy and having written this book, knowing you're going to be helping like millions of people now, not just your own patients?
That's a really, really great question. I think it's the teaching patience, right? Which I need to work on myself. I mean, you know, and so it's recognizing like, hey, you know, there are some issues here, but if we give the time, we give the commitment, we give that effort, that we can work through this. And so to me, that's the best piece of it is, you know, seeing that struggle, but then seeing like, oh yeah, we got through it. We got through the storm. And that's probably the best part for me.
Do you get a lot of satisfaction when you see a couple go from, you know, zero to hero, or to go from not a good place to like actually connecting and being madly in love?
Oh, it's so beautiful to see that. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Because it's like, well, you know, you see their face when they come in, like, oh my God, we're never going to be able to get through this. And then kind of to see them on the other side, it's like, okay, yes, this is wonderful. And it's like, I wish I could take you and bring you to all my new couples that come in as my model, you know?
But yeah, absolutely. What is the main golden nugget you'd like readers to take away from Love Hacks, Simple Solutions to Your Most Common Relationship Issues?
I think the golden nugget for Love Hacks is that I want this to be a resource guide that you can use right away, or you can put away and say, hey, we're doing okay now, but you know, if there's an issue that pops up later, you have that right on hand. So you kind of can have this manual to help you in all stages and times in your relationships.
I love that. I actually want to keep this book on my bedside table. And I love your suggestion of you don't have to read it all at once every night. You can just read the chapter that most applies to you that day or that week, and just keep it on your bedside table as just sort of a wonderful little portable tool. And I think that could be really great for a lot of people. So that's my hack. Can I add that 16th hack?
There it is.
I love that. There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show. And of course, we're going to ask it to you. What is bliss for Kelly Miller?
I love this. Bliss for me is serenity. It's peace, and it's kind of somebody being in their flow, right? And I don't know if it's necessarily happiness, but it's just that peace that comes over you. And whether that's you're serving a purpose or helping people or whatever it is, but that's kind of what I think of bliss.
When do you feel that bliss? When do you feel the most connected in your bliss? When you're doing this work, or what is it in your life?
I think so. Right when you said that, I was like, oh yeah, it's definitely helping people for sure. I'm not sure there's anything better for me than like knowing like I've helped somebody and they can walk away and their day is better.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Then you're a real finding your bliss person. It's been so delightful to have this conversation with you. And I think this book is going to help a lot of people. I really do, because it's very user-friendly. It's very well-written. It's evocative. You give great examples of all different types of couples. I love that as well. It's just relatable to everyone. And I think it allows you to become your own portable couples therapist coach, if you will. That's really great.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You're so wonderful. And I really, really thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. What is the best way for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, and of course, to get a copy of Love Hacks?
Sure. So you can get Love Hacks on wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, some independent bookstores. My website is Kelly Miller Therapy, and it's Kelly with an I. And that's the same with my Instagram. It's Kelly Miller Therapy, Facebook, Kelly Miller Therapy. And I even have a YouTube channel also. Same thing.
Awesome. That's so great. Well, I think your clients are very, very lucky. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. It's really been delightful having you here.
Thank you so much. You.
Each week, we spotlight a fabulous person like Kelly Miller, who is not only living their bliss, but helping other people live theirs. And that's huge, especially for couples. It's an amazing thing that Kelly is doing. So if you are someone like that, a therapist or a life coach or an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we would love to hear from you. We also love to feature singers, songwriters, and musicians on the show. So if you're any of all of the above, just write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. Also, what did you love about today's show? And are there any guests or topics that you would like us to feature on Finding Your Bliss? Write to us as well. For those of you who don't know, I'm the Bliss Coach. That means that I help you get unstuck, gain clarity, and find your passion and purpose. And you can reach out to me at findyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, Kelly Miller, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Olivia Weatherall, audio engineer Juliana Yannis-Yellow, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. We're going to close out the show today with a short meditation. I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people, including myself, are feeling a lot of anxiety these days. And so I thought it would be a great idea to lead you all in a guided meditation, because we all know that mindfulness and meditation are wonderful tools to manage stress and anxiety. The breath is at the center of all of this, and we know this just by tuning into the breath. The breath is one of the best pathways to relieving anxiety. So I invite you all to recline back and just gently close your eyes. And let's try a soothing meditation to reconnect with the breath and alleviate stress. And as you lie back, I invite you just to gently close your eyes. Palms outstretched. And just begin by relaxing your jaw. Breathe in through your nose. And exhale. Just imagine that jaw releasing a little more. Inhaling in through the nose. Breathing in calm and peace. And when you exhale slowly, release all your fear and anxiety. Taking in another deep breath right in, breathing in calm and tranquility. And then on the exhale, just feel yourself letting go of your worries, your stress and anxiety. And just notice how relaxed you are feeling right now. Calmer, more serene. Breathing in again, in through the nose. And then just let go on the exhale, releasing the remaining stress and anxiety. Before you know, you notice that a wave of relaxation comes over you more and more. Breathing here, breathing in, breathing out, taking this time for yourself, feeling calm and at peace and enjoying the wonderful feeling of relaxation and calm that comes over you more and more. Say to yourself here, all will be well. All is well now. And to seal that in, take in another deep breath, a beautiful breath, right in, holding it at the top, and then let it go in a nice long exhale, letting go and letting be. Whenever you're ready, open your eyes, stretch, yawn, and smile. Come back to the space and thank yourself for allowing yourself this beautiful gift of calm and serenity in the middle of your day. For everyone here, I'm Judy Lee Brack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.